again how long the drive from Houston to here is?
4 hours.
I'm sorry. I don't like being in a car for 4 hours. Because me, New York is 4 hours from D.C. I mean, you know this. And I would rather just be on a bus. And the one time that I drove down to D.C., I caught so many tickets. Well,
I was in a bus for 4 hours. I guess that's better. I don't know. I guess it depends what bus you're on. But no, it's good to be here. I'm excited to get to do something like this.
When we talked before, you said you were on a bit of a hiatus. How come?
Well, I was kind of really doing the entrepreneurial thing with writing. I had started my own site. I was editor-in-chief. We had someone put some money into the project. I got very lucky with that to meet the right person at the right time. And we did that for a couple years, and I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot, but I also wanted some more stability, more of a 9-to-5 routine, where, you know, there wasn't quite so much riding on my every decision. I could have a little stability and relax a little bit in life, but I've always loved writing, and I've tried to keep up with it during that time, and we have some things in the works where we're possibly going to rework it again, so I'm excited to see where that's going.
Nice. Now, for those who are not too familiar with Dustin's work, the site's called Crooked Scoreboard. I'm glad I got a couple of pieces on there. My consistency is getting better. I promise it's getting a little better, but it still could use some work. But are you going to keep that same name, or are you thinking of a different vision for it?
Yeah, we've always liked the name. That was the one thing that we never regretted. So
why'd you pick that name?
You know, I think it has a strong visual to it. I think when you think of a crooked scoreboard, you know, maybe it's a little bit humorous, maybe it's a little bit off center, and we always tried to approach things a little bit differently than everyone else because there's so much sports writing out there, and we just wanted to have fun with it and not be like the 20,000 other blogs that are trying to get readers. So.
Does it make you think about Grantland at all? You know, Bill Simmons' former offshoot?
Yeah, that was something I know when we started that all of us were definitely reading a lot and looking toward as a model of really good work. And, you know, it's unfortunate that they ended up where they did. But, you know, that material is all still out there, and I think writers who enjoyed reading that work and who enjoyed writing those kind of things, you know, it's our responsibility to try to keep that going the best we can.
Now, as someone who also sees what it's like to do what you love, but also needing to pay the bills, are there any key takeaways from your time away and what sort of brought you back to it now?
You know, I think I've realized that it is possible to balance a more conventional job with this kind of creative project. And so that's what I'm going to try to be doing in the future. You know, if it gets to the point where you know, it can be my primary focus, and then that's great. But I think, you know, I just think as I get older, I slowly am learning how to prioritize better. And so I hope as we kind of get this going again that I can take all those learning experiences in with me and do it better this time.
Now, the site is still active. Do you have any, like, top 10 pieces? 10 is a lot. Give me two pieces that you like.
Wow. So the first one that really comes to mind is we had this really excellent writer who we were all too lucky to get. He had gotten his Master's of Fine Arts in writing from Syracuse University.
Wow.
Which is one of the best places you can get it. And he had studied under George Saunders, who is a really famous short story writer. And he always kind of brought that literary style to his writing, and he had a very strange sense of humor, but he could also get into a lot of emotions. So in the aftermath of the Paris terrorist attacks, he wrote a piece kind of connecting how we deal with tragedy and how often that relates to sports and how that can figure into sports so prominently. Like, as we saw after 9/11, I think sports were a huge source for people to come together and kind of a venue for people to try to move on. And he really tapped into a lot of those ideas in a way that it resonated more than pretty much any other piece that we published.
When we look at the way sports are covered today, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. At first, I wanted to be on WFAN like so much when I was younger, because you got to interview the stars and you got to talk to the nuts and bolts. But I feel like as I get older, sports isn't the same. I can't look at sports the same anymore. It can never just be about what happened on the court or in the field. There's so much more surrounding it.
Yeah. I think for me, as I've gotten older, the key thing for me in feeling that way has been, you know, it's a lot different when you're suddenly older than a lot of the professional athletes who are out there playing.
Oh my God, it's weird.
And I think having that perspective of we're closer to being their peers now, and I think that really changes the way that you think about sports, and it causes me at least to think about a lot of the impacts of sports outside of what's going on the field, of course. And that's been the biggest thing for me. And I think in sports media, you know, you have things like, or you have so many outlets covering what's going on the field and taking it so seriously. And I think the stuff that needs to be taken more seriously is sort of the larger cultural impact of sports.
Give me an example of that.
So I think people get too caught up in these debates about, you know, who's the greatest of all time. And answering those questions, there's, you know, there's so many statistics out there, and we can really, I mean, the answers to those questions a lot of time are pretty concrete. And so there being so much debate over things like that, I think is limiting where the conversation can go. And I think the area where more debate and more dialogue is needed is, you know, what's happening with sports in larger culture, and you know, us trying to figure out, I guess, how we can use sports in the best way as a force for good in our society.
So do you think that it's intentional that they neglect to cover it, or do you feel like it's just wanting to talk about it but not having enough time?
You mean as far as
like what mainstream outlets do? Like, do you think they want to cover it but they don't have time for it, or they'd rather just avoid the subject altogether?
Well, I think mainstream outlets do cover sort of sociopolitical stories in sports more than you might expect. Like, you do see those topics come up on First Take and things like that. But I think with there being so much focus on the game and sort of the celebrity status of a lot of athletes, it prevents those conversations from being as good and being as constructive as they possibly could be.
What do you make of Colin Kaepernick signing the deal with Nike and the takeaways and things of that nature? Because I know what I think, but I want to know what you think.
Well, you know, he's certainly welcome to do what he wants. It's a tough question. There's a little bit of the cynic in me that, you know, ultimately, you know, is it really all about money? And I think we've definitely seen how much buzz this has garnered for Nike, and how I think it's a winning move for them because it's going to play right into their demographics. So there's the cynic in me that wonders, you know, are they taking all these very important and kind of intense discussions and using them for their gain? But, you know, I don't feel that the way they've chosen to roll out this campaign is necessarily something that people, you know, on the more conservative side of the debate are justified in getting so upset over. I think, you know, Colin Kaepernick, of course, he has his flaws, and, you know, he's made mistakes in the way that he's approached issues at times, but, you know, I think he's worked very hard to try to be sensitive to those mistakes and to try to always improve himself and to improve the ways in which, you know, he's an advocate for the causes that he believes in. So, do I think Colin Kaepernick is sort of somebody who's infallible, who's untouchable, who needs to be elevated to this kind of worship status for what he's done? No, but I think he's definitely, you know, generally speaking, he's in the right, and he has every right to do what he's doing, and I support him, and I support him doing this deal with Nike if that's what he thinks, you know, is the best way to go about his I guess, mission in being an advocate.
I think it's so interesting because I agree with you. It's a good business move for Nike. I don't think that there's any, well, let me put it this way. I don't expect Nike to be on the front lines doing anything. It would be nice. I think it would help advance the cause, but I don't really think that that's their role or that they want to do that. But I've seen a lot of people take issue with Colin Kaepernick for taking the deal, and my sentiment is, why wouldn't you take the deal?
Right. And I think he's shown that he's, you know, he's been pretty charitable as far as supporting the causes he believes in, not just by speaking out, but by, you know, putting his money there. So I think, you know, it's perfectly fine for him to want more resources to, you know, do what he's doing. And of course he's gonna keep some for himself too, but he deserves that.
Yeah, because I don't see anybody else protesting whatever paycheck they get from work saying, nah, y'all can keep part of it. Can we go? I want to go 4 hours back up to Houston. You sent me a draft. I know you're still working on it, but you sent me a draft about the Sugar Land Skeeters. Now, you know I'm a Long Island guy, so once you said Atlantic League, I was already on board. The Ducks have been around since the inception of the league, but can you give our listeners a gist of what your piece is about?
So I live in Southwest Houston, which is close to Sugar Land, Texas, which is about a 25-minute drive. And so I'm kind of right in the middle of Minute Maid Park and Constellation Field, where the Sugar Land Skeeters of the Atlantic League play. And I've been going to a lot of Skeeters games this season. I've been to about 10. And, you know, a lot of people in Houston, they're not really so connected with the team. And, you know, they're surprised that I go to so many of these games, and I've only gone to the Astros once this year. But I've just, I have a very deep love of baseball, and particularly baseball in the ballpark. I don't watch a lot of baseball on TV. I don't necessarily follow the MLB standings every week. I have a general idea of what's going on. I listen to podcasts about baseball, but really, I just love being in the ballpark, and I found that being at Skeeters games, there's just something a little bit different about it, because there's not 30,000 people there, and, you know, they're not still basking in the glow of winning the World Series, and so there's something about being at the games where I feel very connected, and I feel like I am supporting something good for the community and helping it to continue to exist, because I know that, you know, with a lot of these minor league teams, especially independent leagues, you know, these teams exist on a year-to-year basis. Sugarland has been able to avoid that for the most part because they have an amazing stadium. You know, it's small. It's a minor league stadium. It seats about 7,000, but it's just, it's very new. It's very well designed. It's kept very clean, and it's just a really good place to see a game. But I know that it's tough out there for a lot of independent teams, and you know they're folding every year, and they're constantly shuffling. Leagues are constantly shuffling and moving their teams, and so I just feel like it's a really good experience to be able to support that and be a part of it and see those players who are trying to get back into the major leagues. You know, the odds of that are always pretty slim, but you know, the Skeeters have had, I think, at least a dozen players purchased by major league affiliated teams this year. So it's cool to see that happen and to see those dreams kind of living on, and I love being a part of it.
What part of Sugar Land Skeeters games makes you more excited than Houston games? Keep in mind that Houston won the World Series, for those who are unaware.
Well, I think there's definitely a feeling of being closer to the game. I don't know. When you're in Minute Maid Park, it's almost a little bit like watching the game on TV in a way.
Wow. How so?
It's difficult because, of course, it's an amazing stadium and the Astros are an amazing team, and it's great to be able to witness those talents. But when you're at the Skeeters game, you can just hear everything, it's just, for me, it's easier to feel the emotions of the game. And I don't know if you know, just being, it's just being in the smaller stadium, or just knowing that these players' futures in baseball, in a lot of cases, they're riding on every game and every at bat and every pitch. And so there's just something very compelling about that to me. And even though, you know, there's going to be a lot more failures than successes as far as their goals of, you know, getting back to the major leagues, there's just something very compelling about being along for the ride with that. And especially because, you know, I'm sure they see what's happening with the Astros, like these people who are essentially in the same city as them, just on a completely different level as far as success and notoriety and everything. You know, I feel good about kind of being able to say, like, hey, I'm here for you guys too. Not that I'm their savior, and they're just so grateful to be in my presence or anything. But I don't know. It just gives me a good feeling.
There's something that really gets under my skin when people talk about baseball. They always say that it's boring, and maybe it's because I played. It's also because I learned to love the game, but it's almost like this very weird seesaw. You know, on one hand, it's really intense. Like you said, every pitch matters, every swing of the bat matters, all that sort of stuff. But there is time in between each one. So it's almost, how do you describe that?
Yeah, I think the thing about baseball is, you know, it does have its boring stretches. But I think the most intense moments in baseball are more intense than those equivalent moments in any other sport. And I think the less compelling games in baseball, they help you appreciate the close games, down by three in the bottom of the ninth with the bases loaded situations. And, you know, I think the pacing of the game, the build-up before each pitch and then the release and then the build-up and the release of that tension is something that's riveting, and especially, you know, when you're in the park witnessing it in person.
Have you ever seen baseball outside the country?
I haven't. That's something I definitely want to do.
Where would you want to go first?
I think there's only one answer, and that's Japan. And
thanks.
As you've chronicled very well on this show, I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of good stuff going on in Latin America as well, but Japan is really interesting to me because, you know, Japanese players have really only started to make an impact in America in the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're still kind of learning a lot more about their baseball culture and really kind of hopefully learning from it and using it to make things a little bit more exciting in the major leagues here in the States. But yeah, I think that would definitely be my first choice.
I'm telling you, it's wild. I would, if I had the money, I would sponsor a trip of a bunch of people just to go. And I'm still kind of upset I didn't get to go to the Tokyo Dome because I'm not going to lie to you, I was hell-bent on seeing the Tokyo Giants play. Their game was during my work event. So I quote unquote settled for a pretty exciting game myself, but I can't lie to you. I want to go to Cuba next.
Okay.
I mean, why wouldn't I want to go where the Hernandez brothers came out of, Rolas Chapman came out of there, like, and Yoenis Cespedes for that matter. It's just, there's something about baseball in a sort of suppressed society that really just makes it come alive.
Yeah, it's, I mean, for a lot of those guys, it's the only way out is to be great at baseball. So there's definitely something very interesting about that.
When you look at, you know, the relaunch of Crooked Scoreboard, do you want it to keep its same form, or is there another evolution that you're looking for?
You know, I think our mission to talk about sports and cover them in a unique and funny and a little bit outside of the box way is going to remain. I think as editor-in-chief, I've learned a lot that could help us do a lot better covering current events and being really topical in ways that we weren't before and really tapping into that. And so I think that's going to be one of my goals moving forward is to learn from some of those mistakes of, you know, maybe having our pieces planned out too far ahead of time. You know, being more open to pitches and ideas from outside writers who weren't part of our regular rotation of contributors is something that I definitely want to look at too. So if you're listening to this and you're a writer, definitely check us out. I'm sure there's lots of people out there with lots to say about the stuff we want to talk about.
And that's indeed true. And for the record, even though it's been on hiatus, crookedscoreboard.com is still active as a site.
Oh yeah. Yep. You can go on there and read everything that we did. I think that a lot of it is still going to have value. Especially because we always tried to write and publish with the idea in mind that we want our pieces to be compelling, even if the person coming into them doesn't know a lot about sports. And that's been something that really guided us as we published our points of view. So I think that a lot of the stuff would hold up.
Looking forward to it. Justin, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
It's really exciting because we have not seen each other since 2013. Is that about
right? Yeah, yep, I think that would be it.
But you still came out. Thank you for gracing the podcast. Thank you for gracing the people. The links for crookedscoreboard.com will be below. Is there any way that people can reach you on social media or otherwise?
I'm on Twitter at Dustin Petzold. I don't tweet very much anymore. I was a social media manager for a large company for a while, and that kind of took away all of my tweeting capacity for my personal stuff. But maybe I'll get back into that, and you'll see me on Twitter sometime.
That would be nice, Dustin. Thank you so much again, bud. I appreciate it.